since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1265. This is your host, Danny Pena, and also joining me here, the mean person himself, Paris Lilly. How you doing, Paris?
Good morning to you, too.
Hey, how's everything, man? Getting ready?
It's great. Everything's good.
Hey, I'm saying getting ready for Summer Game Fest.
What's wrong with you?
No, I'm saying getting ready, you know, for Summer Game Fest. It's going to be fun. It's only a couple weeks left, you know, so... Yeah, everyone, thank you. Shout out to everybody that's listening. Shout out to P. He's not going to be joining us this week, but...
Good.
Yeah. What do you mean good? I like recording last stream, man.
You said I'm mean, so I'm just leaning into it.
Wow. Right? See, he says he's popping everybody in Night City and all this stuff. That's mean. That's very mean. Evil. All right, everyone, head over to GamertagRadio.com. Listen to our past episodes. Also, you can find us on... any podcast app, just search for Gamertag Radio. We're there. Subscribe, follow us, and also post a review. If you would like to be part of our family discussion, which we're going to be playing a couple voicemails in this episode, here's how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right. So last week, Paris, I asked this question last week. I'm very curious to hear your answer to this one. I posted this poll on Spotify and I said, what would we like to see from Nintendo's next gen console? If they people would like to see a new Nintendo Switch, like Switch 2, or a new design. I have the results here from everybody, for all our listeners that were part of the poll on Spotify. So which one you picked on this question? Switch 2 or a new design?
No, Switch 2. I mean, there's no reason to go away from what's working. I would just want better controller support, you know, just better Joy-Con, you know, with the Joy-Con drift, stuff like that. Fix those kind of issues. Obviously, better CPU, more memory, better GPU. And I know we got the voicemail that's coming, so we'll talk about this more. I'm not expecting them to all of a sudden jump into the power narrative with Xbox and PlayStation, but something, you know, performance-wise, along the lines of maybe like a Xbox One X or a PS4 Pro. But obviously, there's going to be battery considerations as well, because they're clearly not going to go away from the mobile aspect of this. So, you know, kind of a good balance of improved battery, better Joy-Con support. Like I said, better CPU, GPU. I'm not one that needs it to do 4K. I know some people will. And we'll talk about it more in the voicemail. But yeah, just a more improved Switch would be fine for me. But I'll talk about it more when we get into a voicemail.
Yeah. So. The results right here for this one is Switch 2, 70.1%, and a new design, 29.9%. I'm not surprised. I think, like you were saying, people want to see the same thing that is working from Nintendo. But I did mention last week, I just hope they don't market this as like the mistake that they did Nintendo with the Wii and Wii U. It was very confusing. I hope that doesn't happen again. So now... The next question for next week, and this is a good one for fun, you know. What game are you buying next? Is it Diablo 4, Street Fighter 6, or something else? Paris, which one out of the three?
Something else.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to post this as soon as we have the episode live on Spotify. Make sure to join it. Now we have voicemails, and plus later on, I have an exclusive interview with Brett Ryan Robbins. For those that don't know, he's the CEO of Ascendant Studios. They're working on the new Immortals game, Immortals of Avium. He also worked on multiple titles in the past, Dead Space, multiple Dead Space games, Call of Duty, and other other legendary games, man. So yeah, we had a great conversation. This is like a good half an hour of just us just talking about his career, man. And he actually talked about Immortals too, Paris. I asked him a couple of questions about that. If we're going to see something in the future. Multiplayer, we'll see. You got to listen to the episode to check it out. So, all right, so let's play the voicemails here for fan mail. Let's do it.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
Here's the first one. Ready, Paris?
Let's do it.
All right. Voicemail number one.
What's going on, Gamertag Radio? How are you brothers doing? This is Keon calling from Baltimore. I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on one thing. Should we be holding Nintendo to a higher standard? I mean, I hear everybody talk about 20 subframes per second is great for Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, but yet Redfall has got, you know, so much criticism, as it should have. Definitely not taking up for them for that. But then when you say that, people say, oh, well, it's the Nintendo Switch. It's not the most powerful console on the market. But whose fault is that? Sometimes I think as a gaming community, we allow Nintendo to be applauded for, my opinion, not so great behavior. I mean, they come up with these games that most people would say, if you were looking at it from a graphical standpoint, they would be looked at as AA games, in my opinion. As far as graphics go, no voice acting, no real stories going on. And I have a Switch. But sometimes I think we are a little too light on Nintendo, and we let them get away with way more than we would ever let Sony or Microsoft get away with. That's my question to you guys. As always, you guys are awesome. I truly appreciate the hard work and dedication. And with that being said, you good brothers have a good day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, shout out to Keon for sending us a voicemail. And look, we're going to have opinions about this. But Paris, can I go first very quick? I know you have a lot of things to say. Mine's just going to be short. Mine's going to be very, very short. The only thing I will say is Nintendo has never promoted the console as like the most powerful console. The company has never done that. I think back in the days during the Super NES days, maybe that's about it. But you know, it's always been Xbox and PlayStation have been promoting it as like the most powerful console, but you know, 4K and all this stuff. But Nintendo is known as just for games, man. It's not known for a powerful system. You know what I'm saying? That's the only thing I will say. I'll say more, but go ahead, Paris.
No, I mean, you're basically just going down the same road that I'm in. And Nintendo, I mean, the GameCube was the only time that Nintendo, I shouldn't say the only time, but it was the last time Nintendo tried to compete on the power narrative. They may have to some degree with the Nintendo 64 as well, but it's never been about power performance with Nintendo. It's about creating great innovative games. And sure, we can get into frame rate and resolutions and all of that. And I guess to just the whole point of why does Nintendo keep getting a quote unquote pass with that? It's because they keep making great games. And it's never been about just the hardware with them. It's never been about being the biggest and the best with their hardware. It's about making great games. I mean, look where we are right now with Tears of the Kingdom. We already know it's winning Game of the Year. I don't care what else comes out, except maybe the second coming of Jesus Christ might be the only thing that stops it from winning Game of the Year, but it's winning Game of the Year. And that's on the Nintendo Switch, and that's from hardware from 2017, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Sure, if you care that much about and this isn't directed at Keon. It's just something that, you know, we've obviously seen that's been coming up here over the last couple of weeks with Tears of the Kingdom coming out. Nintendo never told you it was going to be 60 frames. Nintendo never told you it was going to be 1080p or 4K or whatever. Nintendo is like, it's on the Switch. This is what it is. We're charging $70 for it. Get over it. If you don't buy it. And obviously everyone's buying it and playing it, enjoying it and loving it. I don't. Fair or not fair, Nintendo is literally in their own category. And what have I been saying on this podcast for, at this point, over a decade? Nintendo is the greatest developer in the world. They always have been. They always will be. It's just, it is what it is. They uniquely pair their hardware and their software together to create these type of experiences that we have. It's what they do. Now, have they always been perfect? Of course not. We've obviously seen slip ups along the way. I mean, you know, look at the GameCube era, look at the Wii U era as examples, but both of those eras then spurred them into creating something unique with the Wii and now here with the Switch respectively. So just make great games. I don't worry about the frame rate. I don't worry about the resolution. I worry about the games that I'm playing and am I having fun with them? Now, in a perfect world, would we love to see Nintendo have 4K 60 frames, ray tracing, HDR, and all these things with their games? Of course we would. But they don't need to because they make great games. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. You know, I will flip it into the other narrative that's been going on recently. We obviously saw Redfall. Redfall, we're mad that was 30 frames because you promised us that everything was going to be 60, right? And then the actual gameplay of Redfall wasn't good. So, no, you don't get a pass for 30 frames when your game's not good. Nintendo gets a pass for it because their games are good. That's the difference, in my opinion. And no one forces you to buy a Nintendo game. Nobody forces you to buy a Switch. I'll say it for one more time. If you care about resolution, frames per second, and all those other bells and whistles, that's what a PlayStation and an Xbox and a PC are for. Period. If not, go get a Nintendo Switch. I mean, think of it this way. Nintendo has record hardware sales, record software sales, and they barely support third-party titles. It's all their own internal stuff, for the most part. Think about it. Look what Tears of the Kingdom just did. You can't play Tears of the Kingdom anywhere. Look, legally, you can't play Tears of the Kingdom anywhere else except the Nintendo Switch. And they just sold 10 million copies in a week.
Three days, actually.
Oh, my God. You get my point. But what I'm saying is record sales in that amount of time. That's the power of Nintendo. That's what they do. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah. And the part that you didn't say, Parasu, Nintendo didn't really market Legend of Zelda. They just post a couple, maybe like what, two trailers, one direct, and it's just been word of mouth, and that's it. That's been Nintendo the whole time with Zelda. That people were even mad and worried, thinking, oh man, is it going to be a good game? They're not saying much. What's going on? And look,
but when has Nintendo ever done heavy marketing?
They don't need to do none of that.
They don't.
Actually, this is the power. This is the power of Nintendo. And I was having this conversation with a couple of friends this past weekend. But a couple of years back, remember before the Switch came out, Nintendo never showed or presented the Switch during E3, right?
No.
They announced this as a press release and mm-hmm. a video trailer mm-hmm. way after Gamescom, way after E3. And then they had a press conference themselves. No E3, nothing like that. In Japan live,
mm-hmm.
make the announcement, the price, the date, show a couple games, and that's it. And guess what? The Switch became a hit. Nintendo is a different beast, man. Nintendo is not like Sony or Xbox, man.
Well, I mean, think about it. They're always ahead of the curve too, because they were the ones that started doing directs. They're like, hey, man, we don't need E3 and all these bells and whistles. They're like, man, just put it out, be done. Mm-hmm. And now look, this is what everybody does. So I get the voicemail and I respect the concern, but I think it's overblown, to be honest, because Nintendo has never promised any of these things that he was talking about. They never have. So to now magically expect it, why should you expect a great game? Now, if Nintendo's not giving you a great game, that's a conversation to have. But they've never tried to compete on the power narrative. I mean, like I said, not never is the wrong word. They have in the past, but we're approaching 20 years since they've tried to compete on the power narrative. They just simply don't do it. They've not done it in the modern era of gaming. They just make innovative stuff. And even if you go back to the 90s, thank Nintendo that we have Rumble and controllers. They're the ones that started that. Thank Nintendo that we have wireless controllers. They're the ones that did that, right? Obviously, we saw what they've done with the Wii and all that, and we saw the competition try to compete with that with the PlayStation Move and the Kinect, and they couldn't do it. We're even seeing right now, not that they're directly trying to do what the Switch is doing, but both are with cloud streaming and partnering with third-party vendors and things like that. They're trying to jump back into the mobile gaming space as well and try and have that synergy between take the game that you play on your TV with you wherever you go. they're also trying to do it, but they can't do it the way Nintendo's doing it. They can't. It's that's what Nintendo does. They'll eventually catch up to it, but by the time they catch up with Nintendo's doing, guess what? Nintendo's on to the next thing. That's what they do. And I've said it before, you've said it before, but it's just the truth. We don't have the gaming. Gaming isn't what it is today without Nintendo. That's a fact. There's no way you can argue that or say it's not true. You go back to what gaming was in the mid 80s. Video games almost went away. If it wasn't for Nintendo and that NES, we don't have gaming the way that we do today. So is it fair, not fair, whatever? I don't know. All I know is it is what it is. And it's so funny because, you know, I got to vote in that 100 games, you know, the 100 greatest games of all time for GQ, right? Mm-hmm. Go look in the top 20. Look how many Nintendo games are in there.
Iconic.
That's the point. Iconic. There's the point. My personal number one is a Nintendo game. When I did my own personal top 10, I had, three, maybe four Nintendo games in my personal top 10. That's the power of Nintendo. Look, take it outside of gaming. Look what's happening right now in movies. Super Mario Brothers movie. Again, record, because that character is so iconic. You know, imagine if they were to do something similar with Zelda. It's going to be the same thing. You know what I mean? So Metroid, Donkey Kong, I mean, go down the list of so many IPs that Nintendo has created that have lasted decades and stay relevant because they continue to reinvent themselves. That's what Nintendo does. So we can fuss about frames per second and resolution. All I know is they make great games. All I know is I was like, oh, I'll wait to play Tears of the Kingdom. I'm not going to play. I'll play it over the summer. All I know is this, I'm about to play Tears of the Kingdom, and that's all I'm going to play over the next few weeks because that's what Nintendo does. You know, I'll take you back to 1998. One of my most anticipated games of all time was The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, and it surpassed my expectations. To this day, it surpassed my expectations and has led to where we are today. I think about Mario Galaxy, what that did to revolutionize 3D platforming. You know, take it all the way back to Mario 64, take it back to the 8-bit days with the original Super Mario Brothers and obviously Mario 3 and Super Mario World. No, I go forever. Metroid, on down the list. Kirby, keep it going. Pokemon, obviously, everything that they've done Nintendo. I could rant all day about Nintendo. Look, maybe it is my bias. I think I'm biased. I'm pretty sure I'm biased. But whenever I hear Nintendo slander, I think I was like, you're out of your mind. Are you kidding me? We don't have video games without Nintendo, period. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact.
Yeah, it's frustrating hearing. And look, not shout out to Keon. I love the support he always, you know, sending voicemails and everything. And it's good. I think it's a great conversation. But it's frustrating when I hear Nintendo slander because, you know, Nintendo's never promoted this frames and none of that stuff, man. And actually, Paris, another thing you forgot to mention. Nintendo was the first company that had the select start on a controller. First company to start doing that back in the days. And then everybody started copying. Everybody started doing the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Now, I'm going to mention top three games that I love from Nintendo. My all-time favorite. And some of them are more from the Super Nintendo era. But Super Metroid is my top all-time favorite Metro game. Tetris for the Game Boy, the original Game Boy game. And now, my third one, love, okay, this is not the official name, but it was Final Fantasy III back then for Super Nintendo, which is actually six in Japan. But those are my top three of Super Nintendo games and everything, man. So, what was your top games that you had in the GQ, Paris?
Why are you asking me this when I don't have it in front of me?
What the heck? You said you had it.
I don't have it in front. Okay.
You don't need a list.
Dead air. So let me go find it.
you don't need a list for that.
Well, because you're asking me. I know Mario 3 is my number one. Mass Effect 2 was two. I want to say Witcher 3 was third. Super Mario World was in there. Portal 2 was in there. Mm-hmm. I want to say Skyrim. I'm pretty sure it's Skyrim. And see, yeah, it's going to be my top 10. I had it written down. I'd have to go find it.
You never mentioned Galaxy? Mario Galaxy?
Wow. This is why I wish you would have told me this ahead of time. I'd have my list in front of me. I'm pretty sure Galaxy's not in my top 10. I know it's not. Ocarina of Time is in my top 10.
Yeah.
Mario Bros. 3. I have to go look. Yeah, that was number one.
But see, I was trying to help Paris. You know, I was trying to promote his content, but you know, he don't want me to. All right, let's move on. Let's go. It's all good. All right, so let's go with voicemail número dos. You ready, Paris, number two?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here goes.
Hey, Danny, Pete, and Paris. I'm just listening here. I want your take about Anthem. I mean, I had a great time playing it and all the different options you got to choose from all the characters and the weapons. The loot system was kind of a pain in the butt, you know, trying to get those legendary items and playing match after match and just not getting any. I was just wondering on your takes and wondering if you think that there would be a revival from the publisher or maybe another game to come out that has similar features like it. Thank you.
Thank you for sending that voicemail. Paris, I know that was your game, Anthem. Thoughts about Anthem?
I'd rather hear your thoughts. You already know what my thoughts are.
Well, I never got into the game. It was not for me. Look, I don't see EA reviving this at all. Like, I think it's completely dead, but that's just me. But I know you got to see it early, but just want to hear your thoughts.
Anthem's not a good game, and it never was. And to your point, yeah, I was a part of some early preview access because they brought in some people that were like big into like the Destiny community, Division community, etc. Because this was supposed to be a competitor with those. And yeah, we went up to BioWare, got hands on with it early, and gave our 2 cents. And the consensus from everybody that was there was like, don't put this game out. Do not put this, because this was October of the previous year, because it came out in January, but it was around that October time frame. It was coming out in January. And I remember we're like, this game needs to be delayed. This is not ready, because we were doing a direct comparison, because most of us was people, you know, like myself. I think, was Datto there? I can't remember. Anyway, I know Bife was there. But we were straight up saying, this game is not ready. There were fundamental features that you just assumed you would have when you compare it to like a Destiny or a Division that just simply weren't there. And we're like, don't put this game out. I mean, the flying aspect of it was great, but the combat, the mission structure, the loot, because that was the biggest thing. The loot made no sense. Like loot would drop. You couldn't immediately equip it or wherever. You have to go all the way back to the base, put it on to go back. It was, everything was broken. Right, you know, on a system level from Anthem. And that's why it failed. I mean, just full stop. That's why it failed. It was not ready to compete against what was the king at that time, which was Destiny. That was not something I was going to invest hours and hours into. It just was not fun, period. It wasn't. We told them. They put it out anyways. And obviously the game died on a vine. And I know, I guess I can even say this. They were talking about trying to revive it with Anthem 2.0, and I was involved with some early stuff with that too. And I it was going free to play, and I liked the direction that it was going, but I still think at its core, there just wasn't enough content there. There wasn't that carrot on the end of the stick that was going to keep me coming back to want to play. And then going to a free to play model, now you're asking me to potentially invest some additional money into the game. And obviously they didn't do it. So yeah, unfortunate, because I think the concept of Anthem, I was very excited for, but ultimately they just didn't deliver, you know, on that promise. And look, I'm gonna just keep it a buck. Shame on EA for giving us that trailer that we saw at the Xbox. Remember that Xbox showcase, that what was that, E3 2017, whatever year that was. But showing us that, and that game was not even close to what they showed in that trailer. And we obviously found out through some investigative reporting, I think it was Jason Schreier, even the BioWare devs were shocked by that. I was like, wait, that's what they think we're making that? They weren't even close to it. So it was unfortunate. And I don't say that. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to be very blunt and direct by it, because I was very disappointed. And Anthem was one of those cases that we've seen in the industry where you're trying to sell us fool's gold. You show us one thing, but then what you ultimately deliver isn't even close to that. This is why you delay games. This is why, if you're not delivering on the vision of what you have, don't put it out. Because as a community, we're going to see that. We're going to call it BS. We're going to reject it. And look where Anthem is today, unfortunately.
Yeah, it reminds me of, remember Watch Dogs, when we got to see the presentation at Ubisoft press conference, and we're like, wow, this game looks amazing. The game came out, mm-hmm. and we're like, it's not like the presentation. What's going on here? That's the same exact thing felt with Anthem, man, you know? So, but here's my question to you, Paris. I feel like there's a lot of games that are trying to be like Destiny. Do you think live services is not going anywhere with all these companies? They're trying way too hard.
I mean, think about, let's think about what's successful in live service right now. Obviously, mm-hmm. Fortnite with the free to play model, that's the king. Apex, Destiny, which is free to play. Obviously, you buy the expansions. The Division is kind of successful, kind of not at the same time. I think it is definitely not at its peak of popularity anymore, but you could argue that about Destiny as well right now. What else?
Valorant. Somebody says Valorant here on
okay.
Is that considered?
I don't play it, so I can't. I can't give an opinion on it either way. But that's what I mean. I'm scratching my head beyond that. I can't tell you anything else that's success. I said Apex. I can't tell you anything else that's successful. I don't know. And the interesting thing is, we know The Last of Us Factions is coming. That's about to happen from PlayStation. So that'll be an interesting. Well, Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves is another one. Sea of Thieves is actually pretty popular right now. It has a thriving community. So Sea of Thieves would be another one that's doing well. I don't know. We'll see with The Last of Us, and we know PlayStation is committed to doing more of those as well. I feel like there's something else from Xbox. Am I missing something? Not that from it was Xbox? Successful, that they at least tried and it didn't work. What am I missing? I feel like I'm missing something.
Well, they tried with Fable Legends, but that got canceled. It never even
came out. Yeah, that never even came out.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking? I feel like there was something else and I'm blanking on it. Oh, well. But that's the point. The fact that I'm scratching my head trying to figure it out says it all. I see what Tanya's saying in the chat about Skull and Bones. I'm just going to keep it a buck again. I don't think that's going to be a good game. I just don't. I mean, when did we see that? Was that 2017, 2018? We saw it.
We actually played it. We played it together.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And it's obviously completely, and it keeps getting pushed back, but it looks like hook or crook, it's coming out now.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah.
I know there's a Division game that was announced a couple weeks ago.
Heartland. Heartland. But I just kind of throw the Division, all that, Resurgence, Heartland, Division 2, all the kind of in the same bucket. Like, I'm very highly anticipating Heartland. I absolutely want to get my hands on Heartland. Again, it'll do a free-to-play model. I think it's, you know, it started off as more of just a battle royale, and it looked like it's evolved into more of a Escape from Tarkov, if I'm saying that correctly, type of model. So let's see. Let's see what it is when it eventually comes out. But I definitely want to get my hands on it and try it. But I think the overall point is, with these live service games, you got to have, whether it's free to play or you're spending the money up front and buying expansions or whatever, you got to have content. You got to have compelling content. You got to have compelling loot. If I'm not chasing something, I'm not going to play it. You got to have something in there for me to chase, because that's ultimately, like, look, this isn't live service, but this is why Redfall wasn't successful. The loot wasn't compelling. There was nothing for me to chase in that game. What am I doing? You know, didn't have a good story, didn't have compelling loot. Why am I playing it? So, especially in a live service game, you have to have that kind of concept. So I'll be interested to see what The Last of Us Factions does. I'm again, that's another one that's on my radar that I'm very interested to play. But at the end of the day, is that going to be something I want to play long term, or is it something you're like, oh, okay, that was cool, all right, move on to the next thing? But we'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited to check out the PlayStation Showcase, which is it this week?
Or yeah, it's Wednesday. Mm-hmm.
That's gonna be exciting to watch. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. So we'll see. Hopefully the game gets announced officially and they show it.
I'd be shocked if they didn't show it, because this isn't a state of play. This is their showcase. So this is where they're coming, showing us what's about to come out, and obviously looking ahead into the future. So I'd be very surprised if we didn't see factions here. I'd be surprised if we don't get a release date. I think we get a release date, and I think it'll be this year, in my personal opinion. I think Spider-Man 2, which will be the headliner of the showcase, is looking like rumors are saying September, which makes sense. I can see that, especially with Spider-Verse about to happen here in the movies and just everything going on. Get that out in September makes sense to me. And then Factions feels like a November-ish type game. Like, that'll be kind of pivoted as their... Spider-Man's the big holiday fall release, but then kind of as the co-companion release, again, coming off the success of the HBO show. Obviously, we already know The Last of Us is hugely popular IP anyways. They can build on that free to play. It's on, like, I think it's on PS4, PS5, and PC personally. So I think they market that as well. Huge install base right off the top, free to play, jump in. We'll see what it is, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, what are the chances of places saying the game is available today?
I don't think so. Like I said, no? I think November. I think that'll be the end of the year type of thing. That'd be a mega bomb type of announcement if it was, and now it's available type of thing. I think it's end of the year.
Yeah, the only reason I mentioned that, Paris, because, you know, PlayStation is known to release stuff, big AAA games, around the June, end of May-ish. Remember, The Last of Us came out, was it June? Right during the week of E3, you know, something like that. So that's why I thought about, mm-hmm. why not release this today, right after the press conference, the showcase. I think that, you know, everybody will go nuts if that happens.
Yeah.
Because it's a free to play game, right? So they could release this whenever they want. It's not one of those, like, is it available on this day? Maybe at least a beta, they could release it and then release it in November, like the official game. That could happen too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. All right. So we have our third and last voicemail. Let's play it.
Hey guys, this is Johnny65. I just want to start off by congratulating Danny and Rihanna on Rihanna's pregnancy. Okay, I have two questions this week. My first one is regarding... so the Asus ROG Ally has just released, or is about to release. I was wondering, what is the likelihood of Xbox and Microsoft releasing like an official Xbox handheld? I personally don't think... they will. I think they'll just rely on third parties. But I would love to see an official one. What do you guys think? And my second question is kind of off topic, but I think you guys might be able to help. I'm looking for a Jimmy Butler authentic Miami Vice light blue, the Vice Wave jersey. I know that the official store still sells like Swingman versions of it, but I'm specifically looking for an authentic version. I have a Dwayne Wade one, but he never actually wore it. He retired. He only wore the black one. So I was wondering if you guys know of any reputable third-party vendors to get something like that. All right, thank you.
First of all, thank you for the voicemail. And yes, me and Rhea are expecting having a baby this November. I haven't mention anything on the podcast, but shout out to the caller. Shout out to everybody that's been hitting me up on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. Everybody's sending me messages. And also, thank you to Paris and Pete. They were the first people that I mentioned that gave them the news a couple months back. And thank you for the support, man. I needed some advice. first time parent, man. You know what I'm saying? So. But just that. Now, Paris, I know he talked about the ROG
Ally.
This is from Asus. Their handheld is coming out, I believe, next month. And I know people have been comparing to the Steam Deck and everything like that. Now, I know he asked about if Xbox is going to release their own handheld. I don't see that happening. I know there's been talk since the beginning, the old G days of Xbox. I know there was rumor of an X-Boy. I don't remember that, Paris, mm-hmm. back in the days. And I'm glad it never released one because, honestly, I think Nintendo just, at that time, they had the handheld market locked down. Now it's a little bit different because now you see Steam and other companies trying to experiment. And some of them has been working for them, some doesn't. But your thoughts, Paris, you think Xbox will ever release their own handheld at all?
No, I don't think so. That's the whole point of the cloud streaming initiative. And this is the whole point of them partnering with companies like Asus. Let them do the R&D on the handhelds. Let them, you know, struggle bust through, you know, the CPU and GPU power consumption and, you know, the short battery life and all of that. They can just say, hey, like, again, with the ROG Ally, you know, it runs Windows. There you go. Xbox app. Mm-hmm. Game Pass, boom, you can download it, play it natively, go from there. There's your Xbox handheld right there coming next month. And then obviously the cloud variants that we've seen, like Logitech G has theirs. You can technically do cloud streaming on the Steam Deck with some tinkering, things like that. Hell, hook up your phone with a backbone, you can do cloud streaming via that as well. So in a weird way, an Xbox handheld already does exist. I see Xbox working with companies like Asus as far as, you know, at the operating system level, you know, kind of doing improvements to the UI and things to make it easier to navigate through. So you don't have to do so much tinkering, make it more of a pick up and play experience. But as far as Xbox themselves coming out with the, I don't know, the Series T or whatever the heck you would call it, their mobile handheld, I don't see that happening. No, I don't think they would.
Yeah. And it's working for Xbox to also have, you know, games on mobile, just connect some controller and just play. I think it's been working for them. And honestly, Xbox doesn't really need to release a handheld like that, you know, like a Asus ROG Ally or Steam Deck or anything like that. So partnering with them makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Now, mm-hmm. do you see yourself getting a
yes
ROG Ally Paris?
Yes, I have pre-ordered.
Oh, you know, oh wow.
Despite what some, I'm just going to say it, despite what some idiot podcasters may say on their podcast, no, I don't ask for free things. I go buy them if I want them.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you. Congratulations, Paris. Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear your thoughts once you get the device. So when is the official date? Is it early June, late June?
I think it's June 12th or the 13th. It's like right after Summer Game Fest. I know that. So okay. it's that week right after that.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, I know he mentioned about Miami Heat. Shout out to the 305. You could go to the Miami Heat official store. Sometimes they have like temporary stuff. I know they've done this with multiple teams where there's like a certain shirt or jersey that's only for like temporary. They have it on the store and everything like that. Now, if you want somewhere else, hey, man, go to random sites, which I find stuff for me that's collectibles and things that actually fans actually will make them. Like I seen sneakers, custom made sneakers and stuff like that. Go to the Etsy store. It's a pretty good spot for you to check out. You could go there. I'm trying to think of other places, man. But what is that, Paris? Twitter. I'm sorry, I'm confused. I saw the chat, but yeah, it's all good. So yeah, man, just go there and I think that will be, you can find like jerseys like that in there, man, you know? So, but Paris, anything you want to say about NBA predictions? Who do you think is going to go all the way or what?
Well, I think the Nuggets are going to win the title. That's what I Nuggets. Think. Nuggets. Yep. Yep.
So you think Nuggets is going to be Heat right away, big time?
I do. And I'm not even being, you know, trying to be.
No, it's still discussion.
But no. Yeah. Obviously, as of this recording, my Lakers are down 3-0. So the safe assumption is they will lose to the Nuggets. And I think they go on to win the NBA title. I just think that Jokic is the best player in the NBA right now. I think what we've seen Murray do, you know, here in the playoffs has been great. They have great depth. They have great size. I just think they're the best team. I mean, technically, they have been all year, and they've just not got the respect that they deserve. And I think they're going to go earn it, you know, in the finals and win the whole thing.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were sleeping on the Heat and saying that Boston was going to go ahead to the finals. Do you think still Boston has a chance still, man? I mean, it happened in the past.
They have a chance. You know, they have a chance because it's only 2-0. I mean, obviously, you know, they could. I don't think they will, though. It's so funny. I was, again, just say shout out to Bill Simmons because I listened to his podcast. He had been saying for months he did not want the Celtics to play the Heat. And this is when the Heat wasn't looking good, right? I mean, obviously, you know, they came in as an 8 seed, but he was like, I don't want to play the Heat. He'd been saying it during the regular season. And then boom, here we are. So, yeah, shout out to them. Jimmy Butler, even if they don't win the title, Jimmy Butler taking this team to the finals. You know, the second time in what the last three years or 4 years or whatever it's been since 2020. Credit to him. I mean, that just goes to show you how transcendent of a player that he is. When the lights are the brightest, he shows up. So yeah, shout out to Jimmy Buckets, great player.
Yeah, and shout out to my nephew. The whole house was against my brother because he was supporting the Knicks all the way. Yeah, but it's good, man. This is great time to watch. You know, NBA and everything like that, so it's cool, man. Now the only thing that I was saying about this, man, I just hope, and I think it's not gonna happen, but man, I was just praying not to see the playoffs, the finals here in LA during Summer Game Fest, because I know we experienced that multiple times during E3, and man, that was just like chaotic. It was very crazy. No parking, everything's expensive, all the bars and restaurants completely full. And the scary part, when the Lakers won the finals and you're around that area, oh my god, terrifying. I was like, oh my god. Yeah, but Paris, how was going to the playoffs, man? I know you went a couple of times now.
Great. It was great. Went with my son, and the whole point in that one was it was his birthday. He's 17 now, and he's a Warriors fan, and he never got to see Steph Curry in person. So it was like,
that's dope.
Warriors, Lakers playoffs, Steph, LeBron. This could be potentially the last time we see them in the playoffs. I got an opportunity to go. My wife gave me the green light on the finances. So I went ahead and took out a third mortgage, and we went, and it was a great time. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah. But that to me is priceless when you actually taking your son to these moments, you know, these iconic moments, never going to forget it.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We're going to play now my interview with Brett Robbins, and we'll be right back after this. And this is a podcast exclusive. Check it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, let's talk about our sponsor for this week's episode of Gamertag Radio, and that's Factor. During the prime spring season, you need the wholesome, convenient meals to energize you for warmer, more active days and keep you on track reaching your goals. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up with ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You will save time, eat well, and tackle everything on your to-do list. I already got a package, multiple packages from Factor, and I loved it. There's meat. You can also eat just straight up vegetables. They also sent me some smoothies too. The mango one was very, very delicious. So this is a must have an experience. And actually, we went out to outside and started eating this. We cooked it. It took a couple of minutes, of course. And we went out and, kind of like a little picnic. And we enjoy. And it was very, very delicious, man. So, but look, again, if you guys are too busy to cook this May, with Factor, skip the trip to the grocery store and skip the chopping, the prepping, the cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just a few minutes. So all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Then get back outside and soak up the warmer weather. And per serving, 550 calories per serving, man. So this is really, really good. And GTR listeners, this is for you. Head over right now to factormeals.com/GTR50. That's factormeals.com/GTR50. And use code GTR50 to get 50% off your first box. That's code GTR50 at factormeals.com /GTR50 to get 50% off of your first box. Enjoy.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here, and we have a special guest. We have legendary Brett Robbins here. We're going to be talking about the studio that they just launched a couple years back, the new game that's coming out later this year, Immortals of Avium, right? Correct?
That's right,
Immortals. Yeah, so we're going to be talking about that and behind the scenes too, you know, story, how everything went down with creating this new studio. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. It's great being here.
Yeah. So let's go back. I there's something that I have to tell you, because years back, this is like in the early 2000s, I think, when you guys were working on Dead Space, way back, the original Dead Space. Yeah. One of my co-hosts got invited to check out the game before it went to the public and everything. This was like a community day or something like that. And ever since he was telling me about the game and everything, I was like super excited for it, man. And I became a huge fan of Dead Space, man, because I love horror games and everything, man. So let's go back, man. Like, how was it, you know, working on a game like that? Because I know previously you worked with you've done like Call of Duty and other games, very, very different than a game like Dead Space. So how was it for you back then
working on that? Yeah, it was a great experience. I really enjoyed my time on Dead Space. I loved creating that game from scratch. You know, it was a bunch of us that had worked together for a long time. We had the opportunity to make something new, and we just dove in and made this kind of crazy game that we hadn't really seen before. We hadn't seen a really great science fiction horror game before. Mm-hmm. And I was a big horror fan. The game director, Glenn Schofield, was a big horror fan. And I had also just come off of really loving Resident Evil 4. I'm a huge Resident Evil fan. So It was like, let's do Resident Evil 4 in space. That sounds awesome. So we just had a great time making it. And it's probably still the game that I get the most questions about and get the most, you know, kind of fans talking about. You know, even after Dead Space, I worked on Call of Duty for a long time, but People are much more interested in Dead Space generally.
Yeah, because I feel like that game really completely changed the horror genre, man, especially in gaming, you know. So that's why I brought it up here, because I even played the trilogy. I played also, there was like an iPad version, like a mobile version or something. That was really cool. I totally missed out the Wii version. I know you worked on that one, right? The Wii version?
I didn't actually do much on the Wii version.
Yeah, sure.
But that one, we were really proud of that. That was like a kind of like a rail shooter.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, but how, I know you worked, you said Call of Duty and Dead Space. So when you wanted to start your own studio, was that something that you wanted to work on, like just continue working kind of like the same thing, or you just wanted, you have an idea for a very long time, you want to work on something totally, totally different? How was that process for you?
Yeah, I had really wanted to start my own studio and have the opportunity to make my own game. It's something I'd wanted to do for a very long time. At that point, I had been in the industry for about 22 years, and I felt ready to, you know, go on my own and try to make something new. This was coming after, or actually the idea of the game happened during my time at Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had gotten pretty familiar with how to make a shooter, how to make a great shooter, how to make a big mass market, you know, sort of popular blockbuster type game. And I looked around and I just hadn't seen that kind of game, a shooter, in the fantasy genre for a very long time. You know, when I would talk about the game idea, people would say things like Hexen or Heretic, which was like back in the 90s, and no one was making it. And I really got excited about it. I had I have a good friend who was my investor, who also got excited about the idea. And I really wanted to create something original and something new. So, in 2018, I left Sledgehammer Games, which is where I was making Call of Duty. I was a creative director on Call of Duty for 9 years. And then I left and started the studio by myself and just started hiring people and started coming up with this this game idea that would end up being Immortals of Avium.
I'm really, really excited to check out like the full version of the game, because it got my attention with like just the story, the way how you play, magic. Like it looks really, really cool, man. So, and like, how challenging was that to pitch that idea to different publishers? Like, you know, because you know you needed support, right, from the publishers to get the game out there, man. How difficult was that? Because when you explain that to the average person, hey, it's a magical first-person shooter, people will be like, wait, what? Like, what is this? You know, and especially when I got to see the trailer back in the Game Awards, I thought originally this was going to be some type of like Destiny multiplayer, but no, you guys really wanted to do a game that's just single player focused. And I think it's good because, like I mentioned to you about Dead Space, I really enjoy that. You know, sometimes it's good to just enjoy those single player experience, man. So how was that for you guys?
Yeah, the fact that it was single player, that was always going to be super important to me. I've worked on single player games my whole career. Mm-hmm. Games like Dead Space, even on Call of Duty, I would direct the single player campaigns. I didn't work on multiplayer. So mm-hmm. It was something that was very important to me. It's something that I think never really goes out of style. People always love a great story and, the ability to just kind of sit by yourself and really enjoy something like that. So, early on in the first year or so, we had put together a prototype, a demo level, and we sort of started showing it around to get publisher interest. Ascendant has fully funded this game ourselves, but we needed a partner to, bring it to market, do marketing and publishing. Mm-hmm. So the early version of the game, the very first demo, it was, we had gone down some roads in terms of making something that felt like a magic shooter that were very complicated and sort of bizarre and weird and, cool, but like not terribly accessible. And so getting that kind of feedback early on, I really had to look at what we were making and go, okay, look, the most important thing here is that we make a great shooter. And then we can layer on all the kind of interesting, abilities and create this great world around it. But the core of the game has to be a great shooter experience. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of stopped dead, spent about 6 months just getting that, feeling really good. Created a new prototype that was just kind of the core combat with the player spells and some enemies and everything. Mm. And that felt great. And that was what really like got us on the road of partnering with EA and, building the whole game. Like it was the whole foundation for the game really was that one demo. And that was great, and then we're off to the races and we knew, oh, okay, this is the game we want to make. This is going to feel really fun. Let's build everything, build all the levels, build the story, build everything around that.
Yeah, I know there are going to be people like, what is Immortals of Avium? Just in case, for those that don't know, what you could tell us a little bit about the game.
Sure. Immortals of Avium is a first-person magic shooter. It's a single-player campaign, a big epic campaign that's 20 plus hours long or more. It has, it showcases a really interesting and cool spell combat system where you can combo your spells together. It's set in an original fantasy universe that we've created that we hope to, make many more games within. And it is... And it tells a huge story. It's very cinematic. We've got a great cast. We've got a great story and a great world that we've built. But I think most importantly, the game's really fun.
Yeah, I I know you guys have been working on this for a couple of years, man. How challenging was it during the pandemic, you know, to still continue to work on this? Because, you know, originally everybody was working from home. Was there, did it get really complicated for you guys during that time too, or what?
Yeah. It was very challenging. I mean, we had a small office. There was maybe 30, 35 of us at that point at the studio. And it was great being in the office together all the time. It felt very much like a family. And then suddenly, you know, March of 2020, we had to shut it down. And like everyone else in the world, we had to figure out how we could keep working and make it work remotely. And it was challenging. I mean, so much of making something creative is about just being around each other, all the conversations you have, playing the game together, you know, really just kind of immersing yourself together in this experience. Now we had to do that remotely. And, you know, I think there were some silver linings to it. The fact that, you know, we could really open up our hiring. Everyone was remote at that point. So it didn't matter if I was finding, you know, talented people next door to the office anymore. I could look all across the country, really all across the world. And that allowed us to hire much faster and kind of cast our net much wider. So we ramped up really quickly during the pandemic. And then there was all the technical challenges of being able to play the game remotely, being able to talk and communicate well. And, you know, we actually changed a lot of processes, and the way we did our cinematics and stuff like that all had to evolve because of the pandemic. But, mm-hmm. you know, it worked out. We managed to keep the spirit of the game together, the team, and we made something really special. So it worked out.
Yeah, and how was it also, because I know you mentioned about the hiring process, like, you know, was it easy to find the right people to join the team that worked on previous first-person shooters or also fantasy games? How was that process for you guys too?
Yeah, I mean, hiring is always challenging. It's always, you know, finding the right people that can work well together. Mm-hmm. It's everything. I mean, there is no, you know, game if you don't have a great team that can really work well and understand what you're doing and kind of come together, because it's very hard. It's very hard to make these games. So we were pretty selective, making sure people were always the right fit and had a good amount of talent. We looked for a lot of people that had worked on AAA games before. You know, it was challenging, but because, like I said, because I could look in such a larger area, we really found a lot of great people from all sorts of studios all across the country, Canada and Europe. You know, just it was really great. And, you know, everyone was just super talented, super committed to what we were doing. And that made all the difference. You know, that allowed us to really make the game as good as it is.
Yeah, and I'm happy to see, you know, that you guys partner with EA, because one of the hardest things that I've, you know, because I've been working on like content creation for a very long time, right? And as a fan of games, it's frustrating when I get to see just companies doing the usual games because they know it's going to sell, right? But when it's like a new IP, it could get really tough just to the process of just getting that partnership with a big publisher. And also the marketing to promote the game and everything like that. And also from support from the consumers, man. So how confident are you from like the consumers? And also, how was it also from, you know, talking to different publishers before working with EA of, you know, saying like, look, you know, I know this is a new game, but you have a track record of great games that you guys, especially you, worked on in the past too, right?
Well, I think the track record certainly helped quite a bit. And as I started hiring up the team, a lot of my, you know, leads and directors and senior people had also come from just great games. So, you know, that certainly made us feel like we were, okay, maybe these people actually know what they're doing and can put something together. And then we also had some of the prototypes that we had made that I thought really, you know, showed the vision of what the game was going to be. And that certainly helped quite a bit, especially with EA. They played our first combat prototype, our first real prototype. and loved it. So yeah, that partnership has been great. They've been incredibly supportive of the game. They are, you know, EA is a very big company that can has that can get a lot of has a lot of reach. It can reach a lot of people. I want everyone to hear about this game. I want everyone to play this game. So I wanted to partner with someone, you know, a company that could do that for us. So yeah, it's been awesome. And then just on the, you know, that's on the marketing side, and then it's on the publishing side. They've been very helpful in terms of analysis of the game, helping us, you know, figure out how to, you know, make it better, basically. And that's a great service. So yeah, I'm really happy with the partnership. I can't wait for it to come out.
Cool. And then also the consumers, is there anything about that too? Because, you know, for you, you did launch a couple of new IPs from back in the days, especially like, you know, Dead Space, we talked about that. You know, do you think the consumers are, like, the reaction from the consumers lately, ever since you guys announced the game, how's that been?
It's been great. It's really, really been positive. People are very curious about it. I think just the fact that we're AAA and original alone makes us, you know, makes people pay attention and get curious about what we're doing. The videos that we've put out, people are really excited about. I think the videos look great and they show off the game really well. So yeah, I'm really happy with the response. It's overwhelmingly positive. And, you know, people are asking the right questions about it. So, you know, and as soon as more videos release and as soon as the game comes out, all those questions will be answered. But I think, you know, we're making something that can appeal to a lot of different groups. If you're a shooter fan, like it's, you know, awesome, fast paced action, very visceral, very, you know, I think intense action. If you love story, there's a great, huge story being told. If you love fantasy, the world we've created is really compelling and interesting and different. So I think a lot of different, you know, fans of a lot of different genres will find something that they love about the game.
Yeah. What was it that during the process of working on this game, what was it, the couple of things do you think that stood out to you personally as a developer? Or was there anything that, that you feel like people should know, like, you know, working on a game like this behind the scenes that you really haven't really been talking about?
I mean, I think the fact that we stuck to our vision, I had a period of about 4 months when I started the game where it was just me. I was a company of one person, and I was able to sit and write and come up with sort of the game design document and a story outline and kind of create some pillars as to what I really wanted the game to be. And if you read that document now, 5 years later, it really, you know, has pretty much held true. Now, a lot of the ideas have gotten much better. We've iterated a lot, you know, smarter and more talented people have come on the team to make, you know, take some of those ideas and make them even better. So, but the core was always there. And I would say a key to success that I've seen across, you know, a lot of companies and projects that I've worked on is just trying to keep a very clear vision and holding true to it. You know, you have to be a little stubborn sometimes, but you have to, you know, just say, like, this is the most important thing that we're doing, these three or four things. And we had that. We had these pillars and we just stayed true to that. And that made a huge difference for us. It's why we were able to get the game out in the way we have, at the budget we have.
Yeah. And how hard it is, like, when to balance the feedback from, like, you have your creative vision, right? You and your team, but also you get the feedback from the fans. And how hard is that when people say, no, you should make this, you should have this. And then you guys like, nah, but this is what we came up with. So how hard is that? Because we see that all the time from developers, different studios, getting feedback from, like, the fans. It could get really difficult, right?
Yeah. You know, and you want to please as many people as you can, but you can't please everyone. So there's going to be decisions you make that some people aren't going to like, or, you know, and there's nothing you can do about that. And I'm not even sure a game that pleases everyone would be a very good game. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, we had the, sort of the luxury of being very invisible for the last 4.5 years. We've really just kind of shown up on the map recently in the last couple months. So there wasn't a lot of talk about what the game could be, should be, might be. It was, you know, just us sitting, you know, in our rooms, just kind of coming up with it and, you know, doing the things that we wanted to do. You know, now that we're showing the game and it's coming out and people are seeing it, now you start to get all the feedback of what it may or may not be. I think on the sequel, it's going to be a lot harder because there'll be all these expectations set. Everyone's going to have an opinion about what we should do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be listening to all of it. But on this game, we had gone dark. We were just kind of heads down and focused on making something great. So there wasn't a whole lot of push and pull on, you know, listening to a lot of opinions and going, oh, maybe we should do this or that. You know, it was our own instincts.
Yeah, you know what? Going dark, I think that's fine, honestly, because it helps you to stay focused on the stuff that you want to work on, you know, instead of being distracted by like a lot of other things going out there, you know. So I know you mentioned sequel. You don't have to say much, but do you see a game like this being also as a multiplayer game? You still see this still as like a single player focused campaign because the way how the game is designed?
I can absolutely see multiplayer, and we actually spent a good deal of time prototyping multiplayer as well while we were working on the campaign single player. Mm-hmm. You know, we decided that, you know, for time and budget reasons, it was better just to focus on the one mode. But you know, the game really lends itself well to playing together. And you know, the prototyping that we had done was a lot of fun. It was really cool. So, mm-hmm. you know, who knows? Anything's possible in the future. It's certainly something we're interested in. And I know, you know, and I think, you know, to your earlier point, it is something we'll listen to from the fans and see how people react to the game and see if it's something people really want. And if they do, it's absolutely something we could consider.
Yeah, well, I know you've been around the industry for a very long time, right? 22, you said? 22 years? Yeah.
Well, now, that was when I started. Now it's 26, 27.
Oh, my God, 26. Woof! That's a lot of years. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I started when I was 5.
So, yeah. Oh, there you go. Now, so what is it that you want people to know, like, about you? Let's say, I ask this question to a lot of people, like, you know, 50 years from 100 years from now, you know, when you're already not doing anything like this, you know, what is it you want people to know about you, like, to your, you know, because you've been doing this for a very long time? Do you want them to remember as like stuff that you work on before the recent stuff now or now your new studio?
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling Dead Space will always be kind of kicking around there as part of my career, and any, you know, if you want to call it any kind of legacy, it's in there for sure. And the fact that there's just a remake, you know, shows that that game is still, you know, there's something about it that people like. So there's always that. I really do hope people remember, you know, Ascendant Studios and, you know, to some degree, I guess myself, but really the team and the studio for Immortals of Avium and for, you know, whatever follows that. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is the best work of my career. And I'm, you know, just really passionate about what we're doing. I'm really excited about what we're doing. So, you know, if all goes well, and I think it will, this, you know, this could be a legacy for sure, what we're doing right now.
That's really cool. Really cool. Now, quick question, man. Quick question. Have you tried out the new Dead Space? What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I played it. I played through it like 3 times.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's really cool. No, it was great. They did a great job, and they did such a good job that I was even like, it felt so much like the original. I'm like, wow, was this actually in the original? It turns out some stuff wasn't, but it felt so spiritually, you know, aligned with what we had done back in the day that I was like, wow, that, you know, and then I was like, oh, that's a really cool, we should have done that. That's an awesome idea, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought they did a great job. I've talked to their creative director, Roman, and he's a really cool guy. And we got to talk a little bit, and yeah, it hats off to them. They Motive did a really, really good job on that.
That's cool. That's cool. Now, if you had an opportunity for your studio to work on a remake, of any other projects you work on, is there one that you would love to at least work on if you had an opportunity one day? Or you still want to do like original stuff?
I'm very committed to doing original work.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah, that will always be, you know, part of what Ascendant does. But, I really, you know, replaying Dead Space, I couldn't help but get some ideas started popping, and I was, you know, thinking about stuff, and who knows?
Who knows, right? That's cool.
Yeah. Like I said, that game is something I'll be remembered for, and people that worked on it will be remembered for, but it was also just like, it was really fun to make. Mm-hmm. And those types of games are really fun. So, I like it when your work can be fun. So who knows?
Definitely, man. Hey, Brad, just want to say, man, thank you for having a conversation with me. You know, I can't wait to play the game, man. Congrats to you guys for working on this and for creating new IPs. I love playing new IPs, you know. And this could be, you know, every time I see a new IP, this could be an opportunity for a studio to completely change the game, you know? Because if we're so used to just seeing the same game over and over, it's like, come on, we gotta see some new stuff, man. So
I'm with you, man. Thank you for that. I wish more developers were in a position to be able to make new IP. I wish publishers would take risks. Mm-hmm. A new IP is the lifeblood of what we do. Every single sequel you're playing at one point was a new IP that, you know, came out of nowhere and people loved. So more of those.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But thanks, man. This is really fun.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
All right.
This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks to Brad and everybody that we made that happen behind the scenes. We've been actually talking for like months for him to be on here and talk about the studio, about the Immortals of Avium. Great conversation, man. All right, Paris, we're going to head out, and that's about it, man. Until next time, guys, we'll be back here in the future. Hopefully, Paris will join us next week. Our schedule has been kind of crazy, you know, because of, you know, Memorial Day is coming up. Summer Game Fest is coming up. We'll see. But I think we're going to take the next week off, Paris. It's Memorial Day. Let's just take it off. Why not? You know, so. All right. So we'll be right back next time. The end of May, beginning of June, we'll see. Until next time, guys, thank you for support. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.